Hey team, I hope you're having an incredible Christmas, spending time with loved ones, giving yourself exactly what it is you need before we start the new year. January 1st might just be my favourite day of the year. It's the sign of a new beginning, a new start, a new you, if you want it to be. Of course, the reality is it's just another day, but it does act as a great symbol of what is next. I always get very excited at the prospect of new beginnings. It's a time to dream, with the moments ahead of us being an opportunity to turn those dreams into a reality. But before I start dreaming, I always reflect back. I reflect back on the good stuff from the previous 12 months and also the bad stuff too. And this year, over the next few days, I've decided to share a couple of episodes on this podcast before we start our next guest episode season 14. And the first episode I wanted to share is an interview I did recently with my friend Alex Chisnell for his podcast Screw It, Just Do It, where I look back over the last 12 months at the biggest lessons, the biggest moments for me, the biggest moments of Take Flight and other learnings, and do my absolute best to summarize it all. And then I'll share my post-year review that I shared from last year, which I carry out every single year on the 1st of January to guide my actions for the year ahead. This is something I find incredibly helpful and a practice I thoroughly enjoy carrying out as well. So I wanted to share both the interview episode and the end of year review episode with you in a hope it will help you guys too. At this point, I want to take a quick second to say such a huge, huge thank you to everyone who's listened to the podcast, shared the podcast, supported it in any way. I can't thank you enough. It means so much, and you're the reason why I continue to create the content, create these episodes, and strive for bigger and better conversations. I'd also love to take a second to humbly ask if you enjoyed any of the content that Take Flight has shared this year. I would greatly appreciate a rating and review over on Apple for the podcast. It takes only a few seconds and goes a long, long way. So thank you so much for that. Once again, I hope both of these episodes are helpful for you at this time of the year. Here is to a very happy, very fulfilling, and of course, fun 2022. Cheers, everybody.
So welcome to another episode of Screw It, Just Do It with me, Alex, and my very special guest this week, Mark Whittle, former guest on the show. He's a high performance coach. He's a speaker, a writer, a mental health advocate, and he's host of the top-rated podcast, Take Flight. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Alex.
Good to see you again.
And you. We've just been having a nice little catch-up there before the record button.
I know.
I feel like we spoke to each other constantly, and then we've had a little hiatus, so it's going to be nice to have a catch-up.
We have had a hiatus, indeed. So look, yeah, we did a lot. You came on this show. People are voting now, actually. Yours is in one of the top 15 most downloaded episodes of the 100-plus episodes that we did last year.
Oh, so, nice.
Yeah, top 15, top 10%. And then, like you say, we haven't chatted for a while, but we were chatting literally every day at one point for 14 like weeks and months. But look, you know, looking at it overall, I'm a great believer this time of year of back, but then spending more time on planning for the future, but taking those lessons that you've learned, you know, from the past into the future with you. I don't know if you've kind of reflected back yet, or you're going to be doing that in the next couple of weeks, but, you know, gut reaction, how was 2020 for you?
It was overall one of the best years of my life, I think. Obviously, you know, we spoke about it the first time that I jumped on, that I'd left the corporate world the year before we met. So there was just so much uncertainty, which has led to huge amounts of growth and so many lessons and exciting experiences. And it was just great. You know, it was also I was very early into being a dad. My daughter's 18 months. So that brought its challenges and even bigger lessons. Actually, she's probably one of my biggest teachers, and everything with Clubhouse, which I'm sure we're going to talk about, and the boom of Clubhouse, and just how quickly the world has shifted and how much is changing. You know, I don't want to go too much into it, but crypto's obviously been around for a while, but now we're talking Web3 and NFTs and all this wild stuff that you start to get distracted about and think, should I dip my toe in there? And the world is just changing so quickly. So it's been an amazing year. And I haven't fully reflected. I always do it between that Christmas and New Year period.
Yeah,
have a bit of a routine that we can talk about as well.
But no, looking forward to reflecting, and certainly, you know, you're a great person to do it with, because it was January that we first connected, and then all the madness went from there. And yeah, although we did speak every day, we still stay in touch now anyway, don't we, every few weeks. Great person to look back on it all with.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Something we were just talking about off air then, actually, about saying yes and about saying no. And, you know, the world has definitely shifted, and so many things come into your eye line, such as, you know, you mentioned, and I was just listening to an interview on how I built this with a founder of blockchain, which was, you know, interesting. He never foresaw things like NFTs. And of course, now you can't look anywhere online or switch a channel on without hearing somebody telling you they're launching an NFT. But do you have a way now of, because I've struggled with this, I have to say, and this year I think I finally got a handle on it, but framing when to say no and when to say yes to opportunities, because everything could be an opportunity depending on how you look at it, eh?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And you know, we're so fortunate, right? Because we do have these opportunities. We're in a time where we can basically do anything that we want to. You know, what the fuck is an NFT? But now that exists, and you know, and everyone's going wild for it and making millions from it. So you can literally do anything that you can imagine, which is amazing. But it does mean that you can get distracted quite easily, and there's a lot of overwhelm around what opportunities to take. So this is something I do a lot with clients. It's usually something that we do a little bit further in. So a lot of the root causes and that, you know, that sort of deeper neural pathways and the internal wiring is the stuff we unearth to begin with. Self-awareness, get to know, you know, the events and experiences and how you translated them. You know, that tells you really who you are today and how you see the world today. So we unearth a little bit of that and start rewiring it. Once we've done that, then the next step is to get clarity on who you want to be. There's a phrase I always turn back to, which was from the British rowing team, that said, "What makes the boat go faster?" So their goal was to be the best rowing team and to win. I can't remember which Olympics it was, but win the gold medal, right? So every single decision that they made, every minute decision, the first question was, does it make the boat go faster? And if it doesn't, then they're not going to do it. Yeah. So my goal, which I could show you I'll show you my whiteboard. One sec.
Go for it. And I think that might have come from, I definitely read that phrase for the first time this year as well. Probably one of my favorite books of this year was Steve Redgrave talking about that.
Yeah, that, I had Steve on the podcast earlier this year.
I thought you did. I was just about to ask you that.
Yeah, so I had Steve on the podcast earlier this year. He was fantastic. But so yeah, I just showed you my whiteboard there. But that was something that I mapped out just a few weeks ago, actually. But the central piece to that is my, will it make the boat go faster? Which is, will it make me the best coach I can possibly be? So I believe that if I can become the best coach that I can possibly be, I will be one of the best coaches. So that's the kind of, I bring it back to me, right? What's within my control. So be the best coach I can be. So everything that I do is it going to make me be the best coach that I can possibly be? You asked me about this podcast, and because I've said no to being a guest on a lot previously, the way you spoke about it was, it's more of a reflection piece and it's like the new year and all that sort of stuff. And that's going to get me into gear to start thinking about reflecting on for myself. So I was like, you know, it'd be a really great thing to do a couple of weeks in advance of me doing it anyway.
Yeah.
So every decision comes back to that. And that's what I have to do, figure out what my clients want to do. And that might be to be the best in their industry. It might be to just find more spare time and free time. It might be to be healthier. It might be to be whatever. So then you can start to think short, medium, long term. And every opportunity that comes up, will it allow you to do fill in the blank? So when an NFT opportunity pops up, I'm like, it's not going to make me a better coach. So right now, I'm just really desperately trying to not feel FOMO and not get involved.
Which is a real thing, isn't it? Because I think you can also, you don't necessarily, I can't remember who it was that said this to me, but you can have a jar that you put yeses into, you can have a jar you can put noes into, and another one could just be a maybe, and you could look at it at the end of the year, you can look at all those opportunities that have gathered, and some of them could have come and gone, whatever, it doesn't matter, but you can just review those, whether that's quarterly, annually, whatever it might be, but you don't always just have to say yes or no straight away, but at least make a decision, yes, no, maybe, boom, 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 it's done, and you can move on, like you say, on making your boat faster ultimately.
Yeah, and that fear of FOMO does disappear, you know, when you do say no on things, when you're really clear on the thing that you want to achieve and why you want to achieve it. So like if you're really in touch with what it is you're trying to do in the world and you're aligned with that, then it makes it much easier to say no to those other things. Even if you are a people pleaser or you're inclined to try and help people, you know that the bigger picture is the reason why you're doing things. But it's a practice like anything else. The more you do it, the more you can kind of, you feel better about going, do you know what? Not right now, but thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. And for those listening, what type of people are you working with that you're coaching, and has that changed in 2021?
So I work with athletes, largely footballers, around that kind of championship level. So not for any particular reason, really, but they earn enough to pay for it, right? So question number one, do you have the budget? Yeah. And they don't necessarily get the Premier League support. So there's kind of like a little window of athletes there that believe in personal development, and they're not getting the kind of support around what I can deliver. So those guys are always really fun to work with, and that's my sport. It's what I didn't make it to the top level in, so it's nice to be involved in some capacity. The ones that I probably work more with are CEOs of companies, probably between 2 to 5 years since they founded that are having, you know, pretty good success actually, but a lot going on, and you know, all the stuff we're talking about, right? Helping them to streamline and helping them to prioritize opportunities and helping them to have the foresight with how quickly it's growing and scaling to be able to remain you know, going towards the thing they're trying to achieve. And they're really great because, you know, a lot of these people started businesses with that fire and chip on their shoulder from something that happened in the past. So we can help them to unearth that and shift their perception and get back in touch with who they are, who they're trying to be. And then have the awareness to use that chip on the shoulder effectively and not be controlled by it, essentially. So I get a lot of pleasure out of working with people like that.
No, I bet you it's really rewarding. A couple of questions, reflecting back and looking forward, and then maybe you can share with us like your framework and how you do that as well. You know, what exercise you do as well. So key takeaways and learnings from yourself from 2021. Anything that kind of springs to mind straight away? Maybe it's something that's been reinforced this year.
I've got two. One's a lot of my work is built around what's called the four bodies. So it's the mental, the physical, the spiritual, and the emotional. So again, if we talk about athletes, a lot of their focus in the past has been purely on the physical. And then you had people like Arsene Wenger and people come in and revolutionize the sport slightly just by concentrating on the mind and talk about mindset. And now all of a sudden mindset's become popular. So they do the physical and the mental, but they don't often focus on arguably some of the most important parts of what impacts us, which is emotional and spiritual. So I'd say my two biggest takeaways, if I was to lean more on the kind of emotional and the spiritual side first, was to step into what I'm doing from my heart rather than my head. And I think because of my conditioning and because of how, you know, my environment in the corporate world and what I was used to, I then moved into being an entrepreneur from a place of ego without even realizing it, but it was just my pattern. So I was, right. I only realized this recently, but you know, even the podcast to a degree. Yeah. I mean, it's hard not to. I was just trying to one up myself and get the next biggest guest and the next biggest guest. And there's no joy in that, on that journey, because when you can't outdo yourself, then it doesn't feel good, or you get a no from that person and the ego's in charge, it doesn't feel good, or they don't share the podcast and you thought that they would, it doesn't feel good.
That's a good one. They don't share the podcast. You're like, but it took me a year to get you as a guest.
That's a painful one. So I've really, really tried very hard this year to step into things from here, like from my heart. And it sounds really woo-woo. And, you know, if I was saying this and listening a couple of years back, I'd be like, who the fuck's this guy talking about this sort of stuff? But it really has made a difference, because I'm being honest with myself and I'm being led by that rather than my head and my ego. So that's been massive, massive transition. And that's probably taken me the entire year to be able to do it properly. So that's been huge. The other one, biggest lesson for me, is what I thought anyway, and what I had a hunch about the whole time I was in the corporate world, but just the ability to be yourself and really step into your full potential, or at least start to realize what that might be when you don't work for somebody else. Mm. When you aren't put into a particular box with a job title and people around you that, you know, emanate a similar type of energy around what their role is and then what that means to you, and everyone has their fixed little positions and there's limitations and restrictions set on you as a person that you have to live your life within, versus working for yourself, those shackles are completely removed and you can just be who you're capable of being, who you're able to be or become at least. Mm-hmm. And that's been hugely eye-opening. And it does then come with the challenges, because there is no limitation of what we were talking before about, you know, where do we go then? What opportunities do we pursue and how do we do that? So you have to do a lot of work along the way, because it changes about, well, what is my purpose? And instead of these conversations happening every 3 or 4 years when you're in a corporate job, because you don't need to ask the questions, you're told what to do. You have to do this sort of sometimes every week or even every day, because things are changing so quickly. So I'd say that's been huge and just kind of confirms what I thought anyway. But when you work for yourself, you can really just become whoever you want to be. And it's just such a freeing feeling, so liberating to be able to live like that, but very stressful and tiring too.
Yeah, let's get that bit in there as well.
Yeah. For sure. caveat that.
But no, you're right, because, and I think yours was it Johnson & Johnson, your corporate backgrounds?
Originally, yeah. And then I worked for Salesforce, so the massive tech company in the city. Right. And yeah, so it's the two juggernauts in the corporate world, which, you know, and I won't speak badly about them, because they're incredible. And some of the stuff they do is amazing as well. But it is for a certain person, and that wasn't me anymore.
Mm. It's funny, isn't it? Because when you do take on those jobs, they come with a title. And for better or worse, it's a box, it's a label. Whereas, like you say, if you are working for yourself, if you are an entrepreneur, a business owner, whatever that might be, you could be many different things, can't you? You could be, you know, like yourself, you could be a writer, you could be a coach, you could be a speaker, you can be a podcaster. You can switch one up a little bit more, you can dial another one down. And we've probably seen that more than never before during the last 2 years with people developing different ways of actually developing themselves, but developing their businesses to move with the times, which is, you know, clearly one of the kind of key messages chatting to you here today.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, you know, the things you read out about me at the beginning, I just decided that that's what I was going to do. You know, everything you said, from writer to speaker to mental health advocate to podcaster to coach, like that was just an idea that popped into my head that I pursued for a while and really enjoyed it. And then, you know, the speaking has really come into its own this year. And that's been one of the most exciting journeys, of forcing yourself to tell a story in a particular way and deliver a message in front of an audience. That's terrifying. And there's such huge growth by stepping into that. And, you know, that again, that was just, you know, I want to share this message beyond audio and do it in front of people. So I'm going to be a speaker. And I've spoke at festivals and at corporates and stuff this year. And it's
amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome, mate. It's awesome. But again, that's if I'm in that limitations and those restrictions of the job role, which is what we believe is important when we're younger. If I'm in that, then I can't just suddenly decide to be something else. So yeah, it's liberating, but yeah, as I said, exhausting at the same time.
Yeah, I was just chatting to Dodge Woodall, Bournemouth Sevens founder, who you'll remember as well. Yeah. And he would have been last week's episode, and he was saying he's decided to become a speaker, that he's got a story to tell and he wants to tell it. And I think the first one that he was doing was up at Aston Villa Football Club, and he was like asking my advice, and I was like, don't ask me. I said, I'm used to hosting or like co-hosting stuff, but I'm not used to say standing there and telling a story in front of an audience, like on my own without anyone else to kind of bat things off, which is a very different beast, I'd imagine.
Oh, mate, it is. It's so rewarding afterwards. In the moment, it's quite exhilarating. Beforehand, it's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Like the last one that I did was, I had Russell Cain on the podcast earlier this year, and he was fantastic. And I was really picking his brains about performing, just because of, you know, delivering a joke and needing that response and validation really from the audiences is different to delivering a talk like what I give, which is more about performance and the things we're talking about today, which is more educational. So it's far more scary to tell a joke and try and get a laugh. He's talking about how, you know, energy and stress and fear manifests in the body, and he physically had to go and shake off and jump up and down to get the energy out before he goes on stage. And he actually invited me very kindly after we met to one of his shows, and I could see him behind the curtain doing it before he came on.
Really?
And then I took that into my talks as well. So every time now, like I'll just before I go on, I'll sneak into the toilet and I'll jump up and down and shake around and get all the energy out, and then be like, oh, right, deep breath, and then I can go and do it.
Love it. And something mentioned before, you know, about, you know, chasing the next biggest guest, the next biggest guest, the next biggest guest. Who's your favorite guest that you had on this year on your show?
Can I give
two? You only pick one. Oh, go on then.
You're being kind to me. I'm actually going to cheat even more because so Steve Redgrave, who we mentioned already, and Sir Clive Woodward were both within 2 weeks of each other. Wow. So that was really amazing, and that kind of like it really sent a message that I was on the right path, and that if people like that were prepared to do it, then, you know, keep going with it. And just those conversations were outstanding to be able to pick their brains, and actually the way I just got on with them, they're amazing. You know, two people who've been knighted for what they've achieved. So that was just fantastic from a place of like, wow, that's how far you can go with it if you keep going and keep trying.
Yeah.
But I had a guy called Matthew Loon on just a few weeks ago, actually. And he, you know, relatively unknown within his industry, he's, you know, he's a king, but unknown outside of the industry because he's a storyteller. And previous to that, he was an animator and he worked for Pixar for 20 years and he wrote Toy Story.
I saw you post about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Finding Nemo, Up, Ratatouille, Cars, like some of my favorite films. You know, he was a part of the writing team and a big part of the writing team for all of that. He worked for The Simpsons as well. Went to CalArts, which is Walt Disney's college that was started by the man himself. So
yeah,
he talked about storytelling, the arc of a storytelling, a character arc. We talked about the hero's journey and everything that goes into how we move people emotionally when we're telling a story. So I took a lot of this stuff into my talks, and Dodge hopefully will do the same. Like that's how we do it, you know, we build the arc. And he was talking about the chemicals and things that are released when we're an audience listening to a story like that. And yeah, that was, as someone who loved Disney as a kid, you know, it's so cool to hear all those stories.
You're only getting started on a Disney journey, dude. You've got an 18-month-old daughter.
Yeah. Do you know what? That's a good thing. I'll take that. That's going to be the best thing about it.
Not so much the lack of sleep.
No, still don't like that bit. Far too much coffee.
Okay, so a couple of other things for you. What do you need to ditch in this new year, 2022? What's something that you don't want to take with you from 2021 that you personally might want to shake off? It could be a habit, it could be a way of thinking, it could be something physical even, I don't know.
Yeah, this is a difficult one because I can even feel my skin getting prickly just thinking about it. But I need to stop being so hard on myself, and that's something that, although not many people likely will admit it, anyone who's got any ambition also has the same amount of self-doubt, which usually, you know, leads to or manifests to sort of, you know, putting pressure on yourself or being hard on yourself.
Yeah.
So I find it really difficult because I'm ambitious and driven to do things. So when it's not how you imagined it in your mind or you expect it to be, you end up being really hard on yourself. And it's hard as well because I'm a coach and I help people go through this themselves, but oftentimes I can't coach myself through that. So there's no benefit from being hard on yourself. We can hold ourselves accountable when we want to achieve things and work towards achieving things, but being hard on yourself just leads to a lot of internal suffering and negativity that you bring on yourself. And yeah, it's something I'm really keen to ditch. I'm trying, but yeah, sometimes I think the lack of sleep doesn't help.
No. Are you one of these people who celebrate successes though? Reward yourself for reaching a certain goal, target?
Not really.
Mm.
Not really.
Interesting.
this is one of the challenges with being quite a sort of consistent, a person who visualizes very consistently. You know, you see it in your mind's eye so clearly, which is obviously how we, you know, attract things, law of attraction, all this sort of stuff. It's how we bring it to us. But when you've seen it so much in your mind, when it happens in reality, sometimes it doesn't, you expect it sometimes. Mm. I've heard people talk about, and I think this was actually one of Steve Redgrave's, was visualize the point just before you cross the line. So you save that bit for yourself.
Interesting. Because yeah. I massively struggle with visualizing anything, yet my wife says I'm probably, she doesn't know anybody else who could literally go, who can manifest something like, I want to do this and I will go and do it. And then another thing will come and another thing. She goes, the way that, you know, without getting too woo-woo, that the universe listens to what I'm thinking, but I can't visualize it. I'm thinking it. Oh, I don't know. Maybe I'm more of an audio than a visual person, for example, learner. But I really struggle with that. So that's really interesting, Steve, that you had that conversation with Steve Redgrave. That must have been very cool.
No, that was really cool. That was really cool. But you're absolutely right. Some people are more visual or audio or kinesthetic, and we all learn differently. You probably benefit from doing a bit of a profile test on that. Mm. But we do visualize things differently. So some people can see things really, really clearly. And I dream a lot. So I know I'm quite a visual person. Some people might get a better audio, and people like to, you know, whether it's a podcast or an audio book, that's what they'll learn, or they'll want to write it out, or they'll want to, you know, there's all sorts of different ways. So you'll be doing it in your own way. Clearly, with the success that you've had, you'll be doing it really well.
Interesting. And what's your favorite moment from the past year? If you could pick out one thing, and I don't know if it was, like you've alluded to, meeting certain people, learning certain things, an experience that you had, because it's obviously been a real up and down year for a lot of people, a lot of highs, a lot of lows. Not an easy question.
No. It's hard because what's coming up is, so like personal is, it's like moments when I'll catch my daughter's eye, and when I see myself in her is like it really dawned on you, like, wow, she's actually mine.
Yeah.
And there's moments that, you know, even though she's only young, there's moments when we'll catch each other's eye and we'll just have it like this, that same sort of smirk at one another, just like acknowledge. Yeah. And those moments are really, really special. I guess that's become one of my real big motivators, is just to try and have more of those moments. You can't manufacture them, but I try. Business side, I think, doing the first Take Flight event for 2 years.
Well done you. I said I still haven't. Mine was like October 2019 was my last event, and I haven't gone back out, and I was like up to four a month at one point, you know. So fair play to you. I saw that in London, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in London. Done. It was, thanks mate, I appreciate that. It was a real slog, and it was hard to get people there. And in the past, it's been very easy to fill the room without trying particularly hard. And we had a lot of people drop out on the day, people who bought tickets, and that was a challenge. But I'm seeing that and hearing that across all events and the festivals that I've spoken at as well. Was, you know, they're just not as busy. People just aren't as bothered, and or not as bothered, but just perhaps slightly more wary of attending these events. But I put together a really special group of people, and I think that's what I was particularly proud of. George Groves, world champion boxer, who's become a friend and is just such a top guy, spoke and delivered the keynote. Or we did more of sort of like a fireside chat. And then we had a panel conversation with Richard Whitehead, the Paralympian, another friend, Thomas Robson Kanu, footballer, and Asher Phillip. So obviously Richard and Asher just got back from Tokyo as well, from the Olympics and Paralympics, which was awesome to hear about what they'd been up to.
Yeah.
And also from that, it was the first time I really shared my story at one of my events, and that caused me a lot of stress. In fact, I made myself ill the 2 days before because I was so nervous to be vulnerable and share my story. Yeah, but I forced myself because I could have easily backed out. Like, no one knew that I was planning to do that. I could have easily just not done it and just brought the guests up, but I forced myself. It was only 10 minutes, but forced myself to do it, and that was one of the most rewarding feelings. The next day I woke up, I could look myself in the mirror and be like, fair play mate, you did that.
And was that just running yourself down? Like, you could just feel your immune system was just like started tanking.
Yeah, it was just, I was so nervous. And it's that anticipation beforehand. of whether it's fear, really. Yes, I'm scared of getting it wrong or looking stupid or being embarrassed. And yeah, my nervous system was so heightened like all day that after like a day and a half, I just started to feel just exhausted and drained and a bit ill. And I managed to, when I got to the event, the moment I arrived at the venue, it was fine. It started to go away. And I think it was just the worry about getting there. So as soon as I was there, I was like, right, let's go. And it started to feel a bit easier. And I, you know, went in the bathroom and shook the energy out and everything else. But yeah, it's just that anticipation before you actually get there.
People don't realize if you had never put on a physical event, I'm saying, how difficult it actually is to get a bunch of people there. And, you know, we used to do Bournemouth, Brighton, Manchester, London, you know, every 6 months I opened up another one. And I always remember that you could literally, the exact number of tickets that wouldn't, people who'd bought those tickets who wouldn't turn up, it was the same, but it was higher in London. So it was like 20% if it was Bournemouth, Brighton or Manchester. And if we did it in London, it was like 30%. And I was like, you know, completely overanalyzing, because why would you pay £15, £25 for a ticket and then not go? But if you've got 100 people, then you sold 150 tickets. That's a lot of people. I just used to constantly like go back and forth in my brain. Is like, and they're like, why worry about it? You've got the money. And I was like, I know, but I just want to know. Like, not everyone could be ill on the same night, or but little things like that. And it's, I always remember one of those moments of putting on an event in Bournemouth, and it was like, you know, a cold, dark, wet February or March or whatever it was. And it was an absolute ball ache for like, you know, 29 days. I'd work my ass off to let people know this event happening, doing local press, you know, the local paper, the local radio, all this kind of thing. And to get 100 people there, you know, and I think, you know, it was loads of no shows again. I think it was 50 something people for whatever reason. I can't remember. And I was just like really deflated by it. And then I went home and we released a podcast episode that day. And I went home and like 1,000 people in over 100 countries around the world had listened to an episode of my podcast. I was like, well, that was easy, wasn't it? Like, how different those experiences. But you know, I love my podcasts. It's my favorite thing in the world. And I loved hearing Stephen Bartlett and Diary of a CEO saying it's his favorite thing that he does, even though it brings him the least revenue of any of the other things that he does. But a physical event is just so hard to put on. So yeah, kudos to you for doing that. I will do one in 2022. Because I do feel we're, you know, whatever happens with the different strains of COVID and all the rest of it, we just need to crack on and get back to what life was before. And I think it's just people, like you kind of alluded to, you know, people's fears rather than, because I thought people would just want to get back to meeting people physically again. But I went to this event in Brighton where I got to meet Stephen in September, and yeah, they really struggled to get people to that event, even though it was like a 3-day event, loads of speakers. You know, it was, yeah, I reckon 50% of what he was expecting to get there.
Yeah, probably why I hadn't mind too, about 50%. Yeah.
It's tough though, it's tough. And what about your relationship with social media? So something that we've seen people, you know, I'm just reflecting back on digital there with podcast, and you know, we've seen podcast listenership go up literally from January 2020 to now towards the end of 21, with going from 850,000 to 3 million podcasts out there. And I'm sure, I don't know the stats, but social media platforms have seen people using those platforms more and more people signing up for them. What's your relationship been like with social media over the last year or so, and has that changed, and if so, in what way?
So I suppose to tackle the question, it's defining what social media is. If we go with the most traditional, it's Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Clubhouse for a period. So if I start with that, then The only one that I use consistently and probably have a bordering on negative relationship with is Instagram. So I'm on it every day. And actually of late, it's one of the first things I do when I wake up is go on WhatsApp as well, actually. WhatsApp and Instagram.
Yeah, you've got to class that as a social media platform.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll put WhatsApp in there as well. Yeah. I always forget that one, but it's very much social media platform. Mm. So it's interesting actually, because it was August. Each month I try a new habit. August I wanted to drop social media for 2 weeks is what I wanted to do to start with. Because I'd realized I'd just got a really bad relationship with it, and it was bringing a lot of negativity and I was spending too much time on it. So I got off for a week and that was tough. But I felt immediately more clarity by not being constantly pulled into clicking in the app. I basically, you can hide the app. So so you hide it. So it's just not on your, so it's not deleted. You haven't got rid of your account or anything like that, and you just hide it off your phone. So the icon isn't there. So you have to like swipe across and search and physically type in Instagram to find it. So it was in enough of a effort for me to realize some way during that I'm not doing it. I'm not going to click into it. So just leave it. So the first week was quite difficult. By the second week, I was feeling happier. I was spending more time with myself, just thinking, which we don't do very much anymore. Like just give ourselves the ability just to think or just do nothing. And by like the end of the second week, I felt so much happier. So I did another week and I didn't want to go back on, but I had a new season of the podcast dropping, and that's the only reason I went back on.
Yeah.
So I did the math, mate, and it was 2 hours a day on Instagram. So across 3 weeks, it was like 42 wow. hours that I'd got back. So I'd essentially over 3 weeks got a full working week back in my life where I was training more. Yeah, it was the biggest eye opener of like, stop going on it then. But I still can't find that balance. I know I'm quite polarized. So I'm either on it or I'm not. And yeah. One of the things I was talking to you before we pressed record, one of the things I'm looking at the moment is having somebody help me manage the social media so I don't have to be going in the morning and posting and sharing. And it is such a good tool to grow a business and talk about your services and connect with people. And that's where the benefit lies. But then what happens on a neurological level is that you get completely addicted and hooked into this platform and the validation, which comes from likes and the messages and all that sort of thing, which we can't get away from.
All that dopamine. Yeah,
all the dopamine overdose. So the 3 weeks was actually the best thing that I did all year as far as like introducing a habit or an experiment. And I can't wait to do it again. I'm just waiting for the right time because I'm just about to finish another season, and then straight into January we're doing another one. So I think after that one I'll do a full month off, and I'm very excited to just not be on it at all. And actually, yeah, just on that as well, Clubhouse was a really positive experience for me. Other than some of the rooms that went on for like a day. the ones that we did, because like it was, you know, short story, but essentially Alex and I did the podcast. It was probably about this time last year, wasn't it? And at the end of that, we were chatting about Clubhouse and different things, and I'd already signed on, but I had no idea what it was. You encouraged me to have another look at it and have a go, and you invited me into some rooms and got me into panels, and that was actually amazing for me starting to learn to articulate my speaking and my I know I have a podcast, but it's different. So I was like up in front of people listening live and all that sort of stuff, rather than editing and making yourself sound good, which we all do. So that was great, mate. And you invited me to be on that. And then I started my own rooms, which are about performance and mental health. And you kindly co-hosted those with me. And they were some of my favorite
experiences
through social media. They were awesome. And the best ones are Clubhouse Easy. So that was really great. I'm still got friends through Clubhouse that I stay in touch with, which is great. So that was a very positive one, but then it died down and I haven't been on it for probably 8 months,
Is that long ago? Jeez, doesn't seem that long ago to me. And that's only because I've just come off it for the first time since probably for any great length of time, other than a couple of days, like I'm going to London for 3 days or something. Can someone host a room for me, you know, since January the 4th? Because I had one of those memories flash up and it was like the first room that I did was January the 4th that Sabrina, my co-host, brought me onto the platform. And yeah, week before last, I was just like, do you know what? I want to use this. And you just see the numbers dropping and dropping, and they're just the same people coming in. You're like, well, if it's not growing, you're actually going backwards. So what is this actually, how is this actually benefiting me now? It's not. Would I get, would I have a better experience by not doing it? So that's what I've done. And it's exactly what you said. I've gotten better clarity by just thinking again and not that pressure of going at this time, you have to be on here doing this. And yeah, for me, I think one of the biggest things I did this year was getting somebody to literally just do my Instagram for me. And I would just be leaving voice notes as to what I wanted to say. And I could do that at the weekend or during the week, just block off time and go, here's a post, here's an idea, here's an idea. And then dumping a load of photos. And she'd be like, can you send some more pictures of your family, maybe something like that? Or if you've got any voice notes from Clubhouse, we could just put some images. And that felt great that I didn't have to, you know, go on there all of the time as well. So yeah. Interesting that you said that. So moving on from that, because I'm aware of the time, is I couldn't let you go without talking habits, rituals and routines, something we might have talked about a couple of times over the last year on Clubhouse, funnily enough. So
just a couple.
So what have you tried? Because like you say, I was trying to try three things every month. And again, I just set myself up to fail. I couldn't try three new things every month. And this was somebody that I was following whose plans I kind of follow. And I was like, I'm just going to try one. But do you, like me, do you get things that the guests on your show will tell you that they do and you try out, and some of them will work and some of them don't work? Or is it stuff that you read, stuff that you see? But yeah, maybe just share with us one or two things that you've taken on, and maybe some of them have worked and maybe some of them you've ditched.
Do you know what? My mind only goes to the ones that worked. I already can't. I'll try and remember someone that I've ditched, but so my brain, if you think something's, that's like with Clubhouse, I feel like that's something that, I don't know whether that's an innate skill or ability, but can sense something quite quickly. And that's why I stopped going on, because I just realized quite early on that it wasn't benefiting me anymore. I think I did it quite consistently for about 3 months and I was like, nah. And then, almost like it's the same with the habits. If I feel like it's not working, I can let it go and almost forget about it immediately. But I'll try and think of something that I've got one for that I've dropped. All right, so one of the things that after I finished playing football I really suffered with was, it took a while to get diagnosed, but I got chronic fatigue. I think we spoke about it in the first episode that I came on your show, and gradually over a period of about 6 years I'd got better and better and better and better until I was completely managing it, training in the gym again and, you know, feeling really great. Then a little girl came on the scene and my sleep pattern was massively interrupted, and you know, circadian rhythm was just hammered and nervous system was hammered, and I had a what they call a relapse, and I had a really difficult January actually, which is when we were first chatting. So I started to do some research into ways that I could potentially start to manage it again, or if there's any new research, because I hadn't really looked into it too much, because I was just managing it myself and seeing the progress myself. And one of the things was to drop gluten and to drop dairy because they're inflammatory foods. And I did it. I ate like that. And it was actually really good at the beginning. I saw quite quick results early on. But then after about 3 or 4 months, I was finding it hard to find the variety in my meals. I was finding it hard to maintain my organization and prep and getting all the right amount of calories. And I was losing a bit of weight and just feeling, and then ironically feeling tired again, because I basically wasn't eating enough. So that was a habit that I think, when, you know, all credit to people who go full vegan or whatever their diet choice and nutrition is, but for me, I need that variety. I'm just not organized enough to do the whole like meal prep stuff. And after a while, that the health benefits didn't seem to outweigh everything else, so I dropped that. So that was one that I got rid of. But I'd say the dairy thing I would probably drop more. I used to love cheese, and then the smell of cheese and milk after I hadn't had it for a couple of months was horrible. So yeah, I mean, I missed ice cream though, but you can get good vegan ice cream.
yeah
Best habits. When we talk about, you know, I'm talking about the four bodies earlier, and particularly, you know, now I want to talk about the spiritual. Actually, no, all four of them. So meditation changed what it meant to me this year. It used to be a calming, relaxing experience to do at the beginning of a day, or a particularly stressful period. It's changed twice, actually. For the middle of the year, I was practicing more what I call focus training, and I was bringing my prefrontal cortex online, which was training my ability to focus, essentially, which is really what meditation is. But a lot of us, we like that calm feeling, so we'll just go up and in, you know, into, call it whatever, the universe, the quantum, whatever, and we'll just go there because it feels nice. But really, meditation, I found it should be hard, because what we're trying to do is we're developing the prefrontal cortex. We want to bring blood flow to the front part of our brain, which means that it's harder to be distracted when things pop up. It's easier to tune back in and rationally think through problems and all that sort of stuff. So I had and some of them are on my podcast, like labeling meditations that I've done as like a guided meditation, which can train us to draw back our attention. So I did that for a period, which was really, really good. And I'll probably go back into that in the new year. But then in the latter part of the year, my meditation shifted to more of a sort of mind and body connect, which again sounds really, really woo-woo. But all we're doing there is it's called cohesion. So we're having mind and heart cohesion, which just means we're aligned, essentially. A lot of the time, our heart says one thing and our head says something else, and we're in internal conflict. So to meditate for 20 minutes and just to tap into the feelings in your heart and the feelings in your mind and just get in tune with that allows you to perform exponentially better, because there's no internal conflict, or there's much less. We're dumbing down that noise. We have cohesion internally. That transfers also into like teams, so you can have team cohesion, and it's quite an interesting subject when you start to do a little bit of research into that. So those are good. The cold water, you know, we're always going to talk about the cold water. So the showers are still an everyday thing. It's become rather than a tool, it's become more of a companion even this year. Like it's every single day. I don't really know what I'd do without it. It's on the days like this morning, for example, I told you, because my daughter didn't sleep very well last night. I had a really long day yesterday and slept on the sofa bed last night. It's waking up this morning straight into the shower and blasting the cold is such a shock, and a, you know, great for wakefulness and focus and all that other stuff, again, adrenaline, norepinephrine, but it just shifts you out of that funk of feeling sorry for yourself. Oh, I didn't sleep very well last night. What's my life coming to? So yeah, there's some.
Nice. No, I love those. Appreciate you sharing it. Yeah, myself and my friends who go and throw ourselves in the sea here, we also miss it when we don't do it. And again, I didn't do it today because I was feeling shit from taking this bloody vaccine booster thing, so I didn't, but I will be back tomorrow. So look, it's typical, isn't it? I reckon I haven't got through half the questions that I had for you, because you and I would chat for ages. So I'm going to finish up on a couple of quick hitting ones. Okay, so you've got a new series of podcasts coming up, so looking forward to that. Who do you want to interview 2022? You can give me like one or two names. Who's like top of the list that you want to get on there?
I've got Dylan Hartley coming on. We're just trying to find a date.
But I'm
really looking forward to that. Yeah, so that's going to be great. There's a guy called Tommy Mallett that I've been trying to get on for a while, who's... he was on a reality TV show, actually, but what I'm really interested in is the shoe company that he's built. I'm a big sneakerhead myself. So he's created a shoe company called Mallett Footwear. And it's, you know, in a competitive market where you're not really looking outside of Nike, Adidas, New Balance are doing a little bit these days. You know, Converse are always there. But like, you know, these big, well-known brands to come Puma. Up in. We throw Puma in there. You know, I think it's outstanding that he's been able to create a brand and a popular one, you know, and getting all some of the major luxury stores and stuff. So he seems like a really interesting character as well. And some of the stuff he shares on social media is up my street with personal development. And I think outside looking in, some people might not have thought that about him. So He's interested or not. I mean, my dream guests are, you know, Michelle Obama. I'd love to have her on.
I'm really
reaching there. My favorite books, The Obstacle Is the Way, the author's Ryan Holiday. Love to have him on. I have a coaching client in Austin, Texas, and he lives there and has a bookstore there. So I'm hoping I'm going to go over and do a week and coach her a few times, meet her team, and then hopefully try and get Ryan on the podcast, which would be cool. So I'll say that one.
I like that one. I thought of you. I've got an interview tomorrow and I was only offered it on Friday, actually. It's one of these self-styled hybrid athlete, Fergus Crawley. So he does a lot of work with Movember. So he's just raised like $100,000, but he's like cold water swimmer, former powerlifter. I thought of you straight away. I thought, I bet you make a great guest for your show as well, actually.
I think I was introduced to Fergus on email ages ago, and you've reminded me to actually reply to that. So thank you.
There you go. Well, otherwise, I'm happy to intro you, mate, to just,
thank you, mate.
As always. Thank you. Okay, last question. One decision you would make if you knew it wouldn't fail in 2022. You can make one decision and you knew it would not fail. What the hell would you do?
I knew it wouldn't fail. Do you know what I would do? I would move, take flight to the US.
Would you? No way. Yeah. Wow.
I think I would, if I knew it wouldn't fail, yeah, I would move to the US. I'd, you know, live somewhere like Santa Monica, or maybe not Santa Monica, maybe one of the smaller like surf towns, like south of LA.
San Jose.
Something around there, yeah. I love the sun, and when it's days like today, I look outside and think, why am I living in England? And
sea of grey. Yeah.
Sea of grey.
Everything's grey.
I just think it's the personal development space, and a lot of stuff I talk about is so welcomed over there.
Yeah, it's accepted.
I love Brits, and I'm very proud to be British, but we're quite a negative group of people at times.
Knock people down.
Yeah, and there's people over there I've interviewed, like Ed Milet and David Meltzer, and you know, all these amazing personal development people who I'm sure that I could like tap up and connect with again over there, and really get in a great circle of people. So that's always in the back of my mind.
Could you do something that I literally did for 1 week, and then the bloody pandemic happened, which was January 2019, fly to San Francisco to do a bunch of interviews with a plan of, you know, doing that for a week, but then you could see, or maybe I could do the whole series and stay for 2-4 weeks and then come back to the UK and then next quarter.
That's a great idea, mate. So I used to do that and do like a week at a time, but maybe once or twice a year. But I don't know, there's something about just going all in and relocating. It's that when I left the corporate world, like 2 feet in.
Just
saying that I'm living there, that's it, I'm committing to it. Because I don't know, part of me feels like it'd be very easy to go, I'll do that for a few weeks and I'll come home, because I've got the safety of my network and people here and brands I can connect with and do deals with and my clients here. Whereas if I just went over there like all in, then that would be challenging, and I'm sure like get loads from it, but yeah, scary all the same.
When I used to work for Virgin Atlantic, we used to stay in I used to go to LA like twice a month, and I used to stay in an area called Marina Del Rey, which is just around the corner from Venice.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, Santa Monica, Third Street Promenade, all of that. And that's a bit of me. That is
100% I know it well. It's a lovely part of the world.
It is. Well, let's dream.
Yeah.
Here's to a fantastic 2022. So Mark Whittle from the Take Flight podcast. If you'd like to check him out, you can find him on all the obvious platforms, both his podcast and follow him on social media. Just go for Take Flight, I guess, Mark, eh?
Take Flight. Take Flight World is my new website, actually. We've been working on that for 4 months. So Take Flight World.
Awesome. Mark Whittle, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me, mate. Really good chat.
Pleasure.